Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The narrative on the continent, I'll call it the Scramble of Africa version 2, right? Or reload, where everybody wants to come in and do something in Africa, looking for growth. And then you have Rwanda, right, which is pivoting to become a change maker on the continent. Just about 13 million people in the country, but very intentional about technology and financial hubs. But more than anything else, when we talk of financial inclusion, we have included quite a lot of our people. But just because now Brandon has access to $10, does $10 really empower him to do more and better for his family and improve his livelihood? Absolutely not. So how do we deepen that financial inclusion? Those are now the questions we're talking about. These are problems that are real. These are problems that matter as we empower our people.
It was my Uncle Stuart who got us into cycling. This was in the mid-80s and early 90s, and in our minds, there were only two races in the whole world. The Argus Cycle Tour, which is actually this Sunday, and the Tour de France, which we could only watch on VHS tapes full of half-hour daily highlights that Stuart got from his brother, who was the one who had the paid channel it was shown on. We're talking the glory days of Laurent Fignon against Greg LeMond, of Marco Pantani destroying the big mountains, of Mario Cipollini and Jamovelin Abdujaparov. Then Lance Armstrong stole the joy of the sport for a while, and it was only really when I moved to Yorkshire and got back onto my own bike that I got back into the sport. And I discovered there was a whole world of big races out there. The Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta a España, the monuments and classics of Belgium, the Netherlands, France and Italy. Important races in North America, South America, Australia and the Middle East. As I said, a world of big races, except in Africa. Yes, we do have the Argus Cycle Tour and we do have the Cape Epic, which in some ways is the Tour de France of mountain biking. But in road racing terms, we're still in the wilderness. But that is changing. We're seeing African riders bag big wins, and we're seeing African countries bag big races. Most notably on that front is Rwanda. As I record this, the 8-stage tour of Rwanda is entering its final weekend, with a last day climb of the cobbled and crowd-lined Muir de Kigali, now one of the sport's iconic images. And next year, from the 21st to the 28th of September, the Road Cycling World Championships will be held on the streets of this small, hilly country. Times are indeed changing. Welcome to How to Lend Money to Strangers with Brendan LaGrange. Sam Tayengwa, CEO of TransUnion Rwanda and Head of Growth Africa Regions for TransUnion. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brennan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Sam, you started your career in insurance in Zimbabwe, and now you're CEO of a credit bureau in Rwanda. So quite a journey there. How have you got to where you are today? What did your early career look like, and how's that brought you to the position you're in?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, right? You know, starting off young in my career from high school, joining one of the biggest, largest insurance in Zimbabwe. Didn't know much about the insurance space or the risk management space, and trusting that, you know, I'll find my feet and grow from there. And before everything settled, the economic conditions or climate in Zimbabwe really plummeted, you know, and I'm sure you're quite aware of the economic migration that kicked off between 2005 to about 2008-2009 in Zimbabwe. So I was one of those where the brain drain happened and found myself in South Africa. And because I had gathered a bit of good knowledge and intel in the insurance space, I was fortunate enough to be employed by Discovery Health, working for a division called PruHealth, which was serving the UK market. It was a big shift for me, massive culture shock. I mean, if you know the Discovery story, you know, the whole vitality concept is built upon data, it's built upon insights of how consumers behave. And that's where I took a massive interest into that space, then moved to TransUnion in 2011. And I was serving the insurance space in the South African context, you know, especially the short term, before we saw that there was a massive opportunity within our African businesses and region. TransUnion in that period had acquired CRB, which had these almost shelf companies in different countries, in Botswana, in Zambia, Malawi, Kenya, Rwanda. And then in 2017, roundabout, I'm sure you know Lee Nike, who's currently the president for the region, joined. And, you know, fortunate enough, I had a chat with him, asked me, what is your passion? And I told him, I see the renaissance in Africa as an opportunity for me to grow, number one, my career, but also to share the knowledge, especially around insurance, driving penetration for insurance in these markets. And that's when my journey into the African regions kicked off. I would go spend a month or two, a couple of weeks working with our in-country teams, looking after the seven countries outside of South Africa, speaking to our clients, assisting them to learn some of our products. And then post-COVID, there was a need to actually grow some of our smaller markets and a bit of focus. And then the ask was, do you mind sitting in Rwanda and help grow a market and also still assist some of our smaller regions where we need assistance to grow the footprint? And that's how I ended up in Rwanda as the CEO for the Rwanda business and still assisting some of our regions. So it's been a journey, Brendan, and very excited at it because with every part of this, I've had a chance to learn new things, learn new markets, learn new customer needs, but more than anything else, meet new people.
Yes, I mean, as you said, that you've ended up with these two roles, CEO of TransUnion Rwanda and Head of Growth Africa Region. So let's start on the broad side and then we'll narrow in as we go. Africa is already a continent of growth. You spoke about the renaissance there. I think 20 years ago, but at that time, people just knew that there must be upside, right? It has to be growing. It has to grow in Africa. But we didn't really know how. What we've seen more recently is a genuine upsurge in growth from, you know, young and growing populations, but also in real innovation, in fintech, in insurtech around the continent. And you've obviously been able to see that firsthand. What are those Africa growth regions? And what are you seeing happening on the ground in those markets? What's exciting you?
No, good question, right, Brendan? The African renaissance or the African growth story has been for a long time just been a shadow. People talk about it, but not knowing exactly where to start and where to get off. And kudos to Kenya. I believe Kenya really opened this gate to what we are now experiencing as, I'll call it the scramble of Africa version 2, right? Or reload, where everybody wants to come in and do something in Africa. The fintech landscape in Kenya gave a platform for everybody to start seeing the opportunity that is sitting in Africa. And not to shut down our West African brothers and sisters, Nigeria also was home to the emergence of fintech on the continent. But primarily where TransUnion sit, our footprint is pretty much within the eastern towards the southern block of the continent. And countries that we have seen to be very much geared up for growth have been Kenya. The population in Kenya, just like in South Africa, about 60 odd million people. Young economy, but more than that, very entrepreneurial. People are driven, people are willing to push boundaries. And the story of M-Pesa, which was a Safaricom brainchild, really changed the dynamics as to how banking or as to how money is used on the continent, right? Everybody, when you want to talk about how Africa has transformed, you cannot talk about that without talking of M-Pesa. And it has shaped the narrative unto which even today we think of digital payments. You think of mobile lending, you think of our transfers. It's because of an African story. So Kenya for us is a very key market. We believe in its growth. We believe in the young population that is in Kenya that is asking questions that matter, that are demanding goods and services on the go. So that's why technology has been at the center of how Kenya is doing things today. And then you have Rwanda, right, which is very next door to Kenya. Very young economy, very young even in terms of population, just about 18 million people in the country. very intentional about technology and financial hubs. So for us, we see the opportunity of having a business in Rwanda by virtue of how they're pivoting to become a change maker on the continent. You know, you've seen the story in Zambia, a new government coming in, very driven to change the lives of our people in Zambia. So those three countries in the Eastern Bloc are where we're believing our growth in Africa will really stem out from, as well as we support some of the sub-regions like Namibia and Botswana. But these three countries, we believe in the transformative agenda that we have to grow their bases. But we're also looking into other horizons. You know, there are countries like Tanzania. We might not have a presence as TransUnion, but Tanzania is a good business opportunity. And then as you move towards the West, like I said, Ghana and Nigeria are equally good opportunity for growth when you look at the African story. But I want to just mention something, Brendan, to what you've said in terms of what's really happening on the ground. The reality on the ground is, unlike in maybe in America where it's one country, all of these countries are sovereign in Africa, right? Each country has got its own regulatory framework, be it policymaking, be it governance. And to try and dissect that, that's where you find sometimes just even cross-border of data becomes a challenge. I'm in Rwanda, I'm transferred to Kenya. Just from a credit point of view, I'm a thin file in Kenya, but yet I could have built a profile in Rwanda. So those challenges are still very much alive and are things that we believe with other stakeholders in the ecosystem, we still need to solve for. These are problems that are real. These are problems that matter as we empower our people. There's still very much a big portion of our people that are still excluded from participating in the financial discourse of the economy, right? But more than anything else, when we talk of financial inclusion, we have included quite a lot of our people, but we still need to start thinking about deepening that inclusion, right? That's another real challenge that is on the continent, right? Just because now Brendan has access to $10, does $10 really empower him to do more and better for his family and improve his livelihood? Absolutely not. So how do we deepen that financial inclusion to give Brendan maybe $100 where he was getting $10, to give Brendan $1,000 where he was getting $100? Those are now the questions we're talking about. Because historically, most of the people either were living remotely, did not have access to some of the tools and technologies that are very much available, like if you were to think of South Africa as a country. Those are real issues that are very much alive on the continent. And these are things we're trying to solve and address, Brendan.
It's actually just coincidental, but I've recorded an interview last week in Uganda and just yesterday with Tanzania. So I've had a little East Africa focus.
Yes.
Yeah, I worked in Kenya in 2006, 2007, just at the start of the wave. And I think in the intro for the Tanzania show, I talk about this. But, you know, I feel like if I'd be more astute, I would have seen what was coming because we could see the way that Safaricom was using voice over internet protocols and such to drastically reduce the cost compared to what we saw in South Africa. But also the other sign I should have seen, and I just remembered it now when you talked about CRB, we used to work with them. And at the time I was in collection strategies.
Yeah.
The bank was buying a group-wide installation of one of the really big collection strategy programs, you know, from one of the household names we all know for tens of millions of dollars. The whole kind of rest of the world was lumped into one system purchase, and it was underpinned by a more Western type of thinking of we'll send out letters and all sorts of things that wouldn't actually work for Africa. And CRB, there's a guy in the office there who had built them a system. I think it was called Recover with an exclamation mark. And I've forgotten his name. I should give a shout out, but maybe he's out there somewhere. He coded just for them, just in the Kenyan office. And it actually fulfilled our needs much better than this $10 million program. And I feel like now when I look back, it's like those signs, there was this technical ability to code and to build fully world-class systems, but to build them on site with a local understanding, merging alongside this new reach of phones. M-Pesa came out a year later, but I do feel like I missed out, and I do always feel that little call. Maybe I should head back and be a part of it.
No, it's been an exciting journey, which I believe is still ongoing. There's a lot of maturity curves that are experienced at different times based on which country you're actually looking at. So where probably Kenya has a bit of a leapfrog, other countries are still entering into their own maturity curve of digital transformation, of credit risk management, decisioning capabilities, collection strategies like you've mentioned. But I think there's something that is critical in all of this conversation we're having is culture. Culture plays a big role in Africa if you want to do business. If you don't understand the cultural dynamics of each of these countries that we are talking about, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah.
Speak to a man in his language, he'll give you an hour. Culture is a massive ingredient in your success story, number one. And number two, there's also a lot of educational awareness that needs to be done to answer to some of the problems that we sit with. We know the problem statements, but is the awareness of some of these things being done in the most credible way to get the people to understand how the landscape works, how the business operates? I talk to a lot of folks that are probably sitting in South Africa. When they come into the regions, they come wearing a South African hat. And I tell them it's not going to work.
Yeah,
it's not going to work. But more than anything else, exciting, because once you get it and you unlock it, you're able to really do business.
Yeah, and I guess you put your money where your mouth is, as it were, because a little over a year ago, you did move your whole family to Rwanda. Now, you and I are both from countries whose histories are intricately linked to moments of violence and to difficult times. And of course, the same is true of Rwanda. But more recently, Rwanda has been the story of recovery, reinvigoration, and as you said, very intentional change in its path and reimagining of what it could be. We'll talk about what you're doing there for work in a minute and what the Bureau does. But first, just as a country, for people listening who may hear the name and then be a little bit nervous, what has your experience been of living in Rwanda, of exploring the country? And should we, whether we're fans of Arsenal or not, visit Rwanda?
I think the first correction I would have had was for the Visit Rwanda brand to be on the Liverpool shirt. I'm a Liverpool fan. So I think that's the only thing I would have corrected. But Brendan, what an amazing journey it has been for me and my family, I'll be honest. What an amazing experience it has been being in Rwanda. Rarely knew much about Rwanda until I started working in the African regions in about 2017. And I kid you not, one of the safest countries to be on right now on the continent. If I tell you that I've never, ever had to walk and look behind my shoulder, even at 12 midnight when I take a walk and I just need to, you know, get my mind and my thinking juices on, I do not have to worry. So security has been one of my biggest wow factors when I moved here. The observation to the rule of law, people on the ground are geared to observe what the country's overall intention is trying to drive towards. And you see them rallying behind the national efforts. Other countries talk about being clean. You do not find people littering, you know, basic things like that, cultural things where people don't litter, because once every month, people go out there. Tomorrow, actually, it's the last Saturday of every month. People go out into what they call Muganda, and they go out and clean the country, cross the country, right? It's discipline. It takes discipline and it takes good governance. You know, corruption rates very low. I'm not sure if you've been following their Kigali International Financial Hub drive right now, where they are trying to become a tax haven, you know. There are massive projects happening with some of the UAE countries on the construction of the new airports, the Gorilla Conservatory parks that are there. It's just an amazing country. I could go on and on about the country. It's an amazing story to observe. So Rwanda is a country that I would encourage everybody to visit once in a while. But more than anything else for me, I think it's the intention of the government to ensure that the lives of their people are transformed. That's what I can close it out to say. Challenging every stakeholder in the private sector to rally behind the efforts of government, and government having an open door to be challenged by private sector. I've lived in South Africa. I tell you this, Brendan, I don't even know where the central bank in South Africa is. But yeah, the way you interact with the governor, you interact with the deputy governor, you interact with key stakeholders in the public sector here is amazing, is phenomenal. You can literally request a meeting and you meet and you engage and you talk about things that really matter. So that openness is what is transforming the country to actually be, most people liken it to the Singapore life, or Singaporean model.
Yeah.
I believe they're driving their own playbook. I believe they're geared up to change the narrative. Africa has got richness and resources. We've got human capital. Why can't we do some of these things on our continent? Why can't we change things for ourselves? Safe, happy, And I believe other countries need to just emulate some of these transformative changes that I've seen in this country.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. And I must say that the people I know who have been to Rwanda, you know, usually they're going there to see the gorillas, which is a sort of transformational experience. But still, the first thing they'll tell you is about how amazing the people were and the country was.
Hmm.
And it takes a special country to be able to do that, for somebody to go and do something like see wild gorillas. And that's only third or fourth thing they remember to tell you about. So I've seen a lot of great fintech events being hosted there for people to get out there. But yeah, let's talk about lending and about work again for a minute. What products are popular? Who are the lenders? What's the sort of fintech versus bank power struggle there?
So if you were to think of some of these African countries, and then I go into Rwanda, you'll understand that the credit growth and maturity is fairly new outside of South Africa. Most of these African countries had predominantly been cash-driven markets. It's not to say there wouldn't have been a form of lending or products that would have been there. But if you think of the South African credit market or maturity curve, you know, retail, for instance, people go and buy clothes on credit. You never have seen that in any of the African markets. They get a shock to hear that you buy clothes on credit. So there's still a lot of white space. There's still a lot of opportunities for better products to come into play. So personal loans had predominantly been the default lending product that you'd have seen in the market across all the financial institutions in Rwanda. But now mortgage, your typical mortgage, right? It's starting to emerge as a product. But historically, people would probably just get a personal loan and go buy a plot of land and try to, you know, use their own income to build a house for themselves. What you have started to see of late is vehicle financing starting to come up in Rwanda. I'm not sure how close you are to the VW project that kicked off, I think, a couple of years back, where they had a factory here in Rwanda, an assembling factory in Rwanda. Because outside of South Africa, maybe with the exception of Botswana and Namibia, most of these countries do a lot of gray imports, right? So you find a lot of Japanese cars are here, right? So with that said, vehicle finance, the process of it has been much of a challenge because the bank doesn't know the vehicle they're financing. They don't have confidence on the quality of the vehicle, right?
I think I took a taxi in Kenya with heated seats, heated headlights for the Japanese snow.
Exactly.
That had since been imported to a country where it never drops below 20. But.
Absolutely. So that is a massive challenge for vehicle finance. So now with VW in country, you find banks like NCBA has got a product which is partnered with VW that you can get a vehicle finance because now they know the car, they trust the Mac, and they can know the value of the car. We've started to see a lot of student loans coming in. There's a massive drive to educate the population, educate the masses, and banks have been challenged to come up with student facility. You'll see that there are two products I'm not yet talking about, and I want to spend a bit of time on them, and that's mobile lending and agri-financing. Mobile lending is the, you can almost say, the breadbasket of lending in market, right? Everybody, when you ask them what product you have, 9 out of 10 chances they'll have a mobile loan and then other type of products. And kudos to, you know, working within an ecosystem where you have a bank and an MNO coming together to find a model that can, you know, fund and distribute the loan, right? I mean, it's exactly the M-Pesa story you're talking about. Here in Rwanda, it's called Momo, which is a MTN product that is driven by their fintech division. So they partners with the bank and push these small ticket to customers. And the good thing is, you know, you could be new to credit. You haven't had a credit, but you've had your mobile line active for more than 3, 4, 5 months. You'll be eligible to start at a low entry mobile loan and you grow your base as you pay up, right? And most of these have a cap of up to about $500. That's that inclusion I spoke about. And now we're starting to ask the question, deepening of that inclusion through the use of alternative sources of data and other credit data to open up more funding for these small ticket loans so that they can reach as far up as $2,000, $3,000. Then the agri financing is really starting to be a talk on the market. There's need to really fund the farmers. There's really need to capitalize the farmers for them to grow their coffee or their tea, etc.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The farmers are very much remote and the banks are in the city. The infrastructure was not in existence to understand how agricultural lending works, right? Without that type of lending, you realize that they'll keep on being subsistence, whereas they could actually become commercial. I mean, Rwanda is known to the best coffee as well in East Africa and tea. So how do we empower our farmers to produce more in and out of season, right? So banks are asking the questions. How do we collect the right data set? How do we know the right data elements that we can use to determine the risk of farmers? At what point of lending do we come in? Do we come in pre-season? Do we come in, middle season or post-season? They need to understand that whole seasonal structure for lending. So these are your typical products that are on the market. And as TransUnion, our role is very simple. How do we work within the ecosystem as a trusted data partner? How do we collect your traditional sources of data plus alternative sources of data to see the risk, understand the risk, and price it better? And everybody, ends up being happy in that equation. So we have a massive role that we are playing right now, Brendan.
It's an interesting space because on the one hand, some of the traditional products we know are not there because the data wasn't there. So you need TransUnion to work like TransUnion works in any other country so that we can establish, the big boring products. But at the same time, you need to work for this new ecosystem that's been built much more around the mobile side of things. What sort of data products are out there that TransUnion's offering to the market? And how are you helping lenders and, I guess, to some extent as well, insurers to get to grips with this new world of big data and all the opportunities that now exist?
So, traditionally, TransUnion will be known for a consumer report. This is an aggregated report that facilitates the information on a consumer around his behavior. So all of his obligations in the market and how he's meeting or she's meeting those obligations in the market. And we provide a score to that or with that. I must say the market is still in the process of moving from historically flat pricing to now more risk-based pricing. Like I'd say, the maturity curve for credit is still in its almost infancy, starting to move into sort of a moderate space. So, when you talk of your cutoff limits, when you talk of a trended score, it's a space that is still very much needing awareness, but we do have scores. We educate our consumers. We even have a solution called Miniesha, which is like a direct-to-consumer solution where customers on the street can access their credit reports via a USSD channel or portal that we developed, and they can pull their report and also see their score and be able to manage that. Because we believe a client who constantly checks on their credit health is a health customer. So we do have a score in market, and we're also looking into come up with an alternative score that can solve for your thin file and new to credit. And can we also start thinking about industry specific scores like your SACOs or MFIs? And then we have what we call our typical portfolio analytics reports. So this is pretty much where we give insights beyond just the tip of the iceberg that an institution would have a view of. So we give more of a horizontal view because we can see what a customer is doing in different touch points. It's important to see how that customer is behaving across the landscape because then they can manage their portfolios for upsell, cross-sell, product differentiation, even product bundling, because now you understand what your customer is looking for. Why are they looking for that product? What is it that you're not giving them in-house? So when we talk to some of our customers, I encourage them to think outside of the product centricity model into the customer centricity model. But over and above that, we also understand that there's a life cycle of a customer. So you have the acquisitional stage of a customer. You want to understand the risk of just, know your customer, your KYC. We have access to your identity information. We bought a company called iOversion, which we have augmented APIs into any of our regions in Africa. They have more than 6 billion devices that they have been monitoring across the globe, and they keep adding more. And it allows us to give the risk on the device. So in markets that are now heavily going digital, identity is very important. Can I identify the consumer? Do I know who I'm talking to? That's number one. We've got that information. We've got those products. But the second part is, can I identify the device, right? What risk sits on the device?
And I think what's really interesting there is that one of the big conflicts we used to see lending in Africa as a sort of a British bank we were at the time, buying these systems from abroad, and they would rely on things like your postal address, your street address. Whereas in Botswana, most people were using a work address, so you'd have too many of the same surnames going to the same place. Or in Ghana, there weren't street names. So you had this old world of KYC when we say, okay, you should put in place these checks to control money laundering, to protect the customer, to protect yourselves. And then we say, okay, you do that by getting somebody to show you a utility bill to their home address. Whereas the mobile, that is the way that we should be validating people's IDs. It is cutting edge international stuff, but it actually works at the level of the consumer. It doesn't come in with these assumptions about like sort of long-held infrastructures that have since been leapfrogged and are essentially irrelevant or redundant in market.
No, absolutely. You know, in this market, digital transformation could be just thrown up in the air, but you need to understand where they are in that journey. Some are still at the entry level and some are at the, you know, maturity level. So you need to then walk with them on that journey. And we do surveys. I know in Kenya, we released a market pulse report, and we did one in Zambia and Botswana. I'm busy with one in Rwanda at the moment. These surveys, they help to give the voice of the customer to our bankers, to our institutional clients. This is what your customers are worried about. This is what the customers are saying when it comes to products. And then the last bit of what you said was the collections, because life does happen to all of us. How can you manage that? And I challenge institutions, banks, and MFIs to say, if COVID taught us to restructure loans, taught us to give payment holidays, it taught us that it's possible, why wait for a customer to fall into delinquency and then, you know, repossess their asset? Speak to your customers, look into what the data is saying. Some people have just fell into hard times. Help them, right, as an institution. Also, it's good for you because you don't have a massive bad debt. So we have pre-delinquency solutions. The one that I didn't speak about is just fraud in detail. So fraud, we always encourage to manage it upstream more than downstream. So try to mitigate it at the point of engaging your customers than to try and pay school fees where now you have been hit. Not so much of a big pain point for us here in Rwanda, but in some of my markets around me, like in Kenya, maybe in Zambia. So those are the products we have in market. Our lenders are your typical bankers, your typical microfinance. But there's a segment called SACOs. The SACO model is like in South Africa, they would call it Stockfels, right? But here they are more organized, more regulated, because you could have a SACO for teachers. It's an association of teachers. They lend within that group. You have a SACO even for the military, even for the police, even for the motor guys that use, you know, small scooter bikes to transport people. So it's well organized, but obviously there's need to do more and need to offer more products into this space.
Yeah, those are sort of the group savings programs, which are essentially a mix between insurance and lending, where you put money in every month. And then depending on the structure, either every month somebody gets a payout or borrow from it. And we're starting to see some innovators try and leverage the best of what those have. So, Sam, a lot of interesting stuff happening. I know you travel around yourself speaking at various events. In fact, on the 14th and 15th of March, you'll be speaking at the African Insurance Forum at the Marriott in Kigali. But you're also, as you mentioned, sort of popping up here and there along the continent at various TransUnion and industry events. Lee Nike, your boss, he's always writing extensively on issues of African innovation. If people want to follow these, they want to have a direct look at the products you're offering, or they want to follow more of the thought leadership that you're doing and Lee's doing, what are some good channels for them to go online and follow to make sure they stay up to date?
Yeah, thanks very much. Very much open to engaging people in different parts of the continent or even the globe who are trying to understand the landscape of, you know, some of these African markets. How do you do business and how do you start? Where do you start? So I'm very active on LinkedIn, like you mentioned. So my name, Samuel Tayengwa, you just type it, you pick me up. I do time and again do posts and share some thoughts, invited to comment on, you know, market-related issues. But more than anything else, you know, we have active online presence through our TransUnion websites. You could probably start off with the TransUnion main website, which is transunion.com, which gives you the global view of how we are set up as a business. You can drop it down to the .co.za, which is now giving you the South African product landscape. And in Rwanda, you just change the last part of the website to RW. But if it is about getting us to participate on any platforms to share, like now with the Insurance Summit coming up, where I'll be speaking on penetration on insurance in our African markets. But more than anything else, what do we need to do different as insurers through the use of data, insights, analytics, and understanding the needs of our people as far as insurance is concerned? You know, I'm available on LinkedIn. And as you said, also for Lee, he has a monthly newsletter that he also drops called Ilewa. So Lee's our president for Africa. In those newsletters, he unpacks what to think about and what to look forward when it comes to the African continent.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll put those links in the show notes as well. One last thing, Sam, the nature of growth markets is that there's always something new on the horizon. So before you leave us now, what should we be looking forward to coming out of TransUnion Africa? Is there anything exciting planned for the next few months?
Yeah, so thanks very much, Brandon. And just as my pair of line, we are very structured on about two or three initiatives that we are largely driving. So financial inclusion is a big theme in Africa for us. We are talking to institutions, governments. In Rwanda, we've managed to structure an arrangement even with the central bank here. And we're looking at putting together an alternative score that will solve for, you know, access to finance for women in society, because we understand how much excluded they've been compared to their male counterparts. And so financial inclusion is a big ticket item for us. And then digital enablement. We spoke a lot on this show, Brandon, about how the renaissance in Africa is all about the emergence of fintech. And you can't talk fintech without talking digitization of channels, digitization of services, digitization of solutions. I think it's important for us to align into these digital strategies and make them efficient and effective. And then the last one is our smart growth strategy. How do we help customers to think strategically around growth? Because growth can just be unprofitable if you're not careful, right? And we've got access to data, insights, analytics. So these are some of the three main line items that we are aggressively driving. And any opportunity we have, be it at a summit, we've got summits coming up in Kenya, in Zambia, be it at some of the events you've spoken about here in Rwanda, and some of the events in South Africa and the likes, we'll always be coming back to these three main line items. That's financial inclusion, in some markets deepening, in some markets driving the actual inclusion aspect of it. Then digital enablement, how do we enable our customers to become digital efficiency? And then the last one is smart growth.
Awesome. Sam Tiangwa, thank you very much for your time today. It's got me super excited about what's happening in East Africa in general and in Rwanda in particular. So I encourage anyone in the markets to look for those summits and try and attend, and anyone else who's been wanting to see the region to look when next there's a big event to get you out to Kigali. There's a lot going on there, and I think a lot of big stories still to come. So thank you again for making the time.
Thanks so much, Brandon, and a pleasure to be on your show. Looking forward to even more engagements in the future.
No, Sam, it's been really exciting. I helped roll out the Philippine Bureau for TransUnion, a similar stage with the first score, the first data products, getting people to see the first time the bird's eye view of their customers' performance. So, yeah, tempted to send a CV in.
Maybe it's time, right? thanks so much, Brandon. I appreciate your time and bringing me onto your show, man.
And thank you all for listening. Please do look for and follow the show on your favorite podcast platform and share the updates widely on LinkedIn, where lending nerds are found in our largest concentration. Plus, send me a connection request while you're there. This show is written and recorded by myself, Brendan LaGrange, in Brighton, England. Show music is by I Am Wake, and you can find show notes and written transcripts at www.howtolendmoneytostrangers.show. And I'll see you again next Thursday.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.